It is 8:02 and you're listening to KBOO Portland. This is Wednesday Morning Talk Radio. I'm your host, Lisa Loving. Thanks for tuning in. We have live on the phone this morning, very, very special guest, Aaron Glantz. His newest book, The War Comes Home, Washington's Battle Against America's Veterans. Aaron, thanks for being with us.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Aaron Glantz is a war correspondent. He's been covering the United States incursions, invasions, wars in the Middle East since when, Aaron? 2003?
2002. You know, I was over in Jordan and Turkey. Once it became clear that President Bush was dead set on starting this war in Iraq, I went over to the region. I didn't go to Iraq at that time because Saddam Hussein, being the president, had very tight restrictions on the press. And the kind of journalism that I do, interviewing regular people caught up in world events, you know, trying to get and see how those world events, like a war, are affecting them, wasn't really possible under Saddam. So I went to Jordan and Turkey, interviewed people there, got their sense about how they thought the war would go in the lead up to the invasion. And then once Saddam was overthrown, April 9th, 2003, I went to Baghdad like a week later and have been on this war ever since.
We are looking at this issue this morning. President Obama says he's bringing the troops home from Iraq, but do you think the war is really over?
Well, the war's not over at all, but I do have to give the president some credit. When he was elected, he promised that he would bring all but 50,000 troops home in about 18 months, and that by the end of 2011, he would bring all the troops home from Iraq. And that's exactly what he's doing. So this should not be any surprise to anyone. He made a promise. He's keeping his promise. It might not be enough for some, because the war is still going on. But there's no question that there are a lot fewer troops in Iraq when President Obama took office, and there are a lot more troops in Afghanistan.
Right, right, right. We are looking this morning at Aaron's newest book, The War Comes Home, Americans' Battle Against America's Veterans. And I just want to put it out, if you're a veteran or someone you know and love is, we want to hear from you. And what we're looking at this morning is, you know, there's always this. I want to say that it's a myth that back in the 60s and 70s, when Vietnam veterans came home from the war, people spat on them and called them baby killers. I don't really know how much of that is actually true. But when it comes to support the troops, I feel like if the federal government, if the military, if the Pentagon supported the troops, that would be revolutionary. And there are so many things that our government is doing to hose all these men and women who are returning from the war. And actually, Aaron, I mean, so you were in the war, and now you Aaron is actually also the co-author of Winter Soldier, Iraq and Afghanistan. Anyone who's heard of the Winter Soldier, you know what that means. Also, his first book, How America Lost Iraq. But Aaron, now you've been on the ground. You were there in the war, and you've met, you talked to hundreds of soldiers just for this book. Can you talk a little bit about, I mean, the big picture here?
Well, I mean, one thing that's important that people realize is that we have over 2 million American soldiers who have served in Iraq and Afghanistan over these 9 years of war. I mean, we have been at war in Afghanistan longer than any war in our nation's history. We've been at war longer than the Vietnam War. We've been at war longer than World War II.
Civil War, yeah.
You know, we have fought this war in Afghanistan longer than we have fought any other war in our nation's history. And so people have this idea, you talk big picture, that there are a lot fewer veterans of Iraq and Afghanistan than there were of the Vietnam War. But it's not so true. You know, we have over 2 million vets. 1.3 million are already out of the military, living in our communities, on our streets, our neighbors, you know, our coworkers, maybe our friends or family members back home. They have another 900,000 who have served their tours and are still in the military and are going to be discharged soon. And as you mentioned, the wars are not over yet. So we may very well have as many veterans of Iraq and Afghanistan as we do Vietnam vets. And these veterans are much more likely than the Vietnam vets to be coming home wounded. You know, we have 56,000 deaths in the Vietnam War, right? We have 5,600 deaths in Iraq and Afghanistan among U.S. military personnel so far. But that's not because Iraq and Afghanistan are a safe place and nobody gets hurt. It's because we have better military medicine than we used to. It's because we have better body armor than we used to. It's because we are better able to evacuate people, soldiers wounded, to safety than we were during the Vietnam War. And so we have a tremendous number, hundreds of thousands of veterans coming home with multiple concussions, traumatic brain injury, physical brain damage, post-traumatic stress disorder or major depression, mental wounds of the service in the war. We have large numbers of veterans coming home with back pain and their backs permanently ruined because of the heavy backpacks they have to carry all the time in Iraq and Afghanistan. Also, the auto accidents that are happen during the roadside bombings also throughout your back and other limbs, high rates of tinnitus in the eardrums. I mean, all kinds of consequences to these soldiers that we are really, you know, even now, 9 years into the war, only seeing the tip of the iceberg of.
Mm-hmm. This is Wednesday Morning Talk Radio. I'm your host, Lisa Loving. We're live on the phone with Aaron Glantz. Aaron, weren't you the Free Speech Radio news correspondent also from the war?
Yeah, you know, that was what I started off doing. And, you know, producing Free Speech Radio news. And, you know, interesting story is before I started covering the war, I covered, like, state politics, community radio in Northern California. And, you know, one of the things that always annoys me about the media in general is that they tend to focus on the politicians and the business executives and the elites at the expense of the people who are affected by policy. So let's say that there's a debate around immigration. You know, the mainstream media is perfectly happy to do the story without interviewing any immigrants, right? Just Democrats, Republicans, lawyers, then they're done. You know, they don't feel like they need to interview any immigrants. And then when I saw the war in Iraq, kind of, it was going to happen. It was the same thing that annoyed me about domestic coverage, but on a grander scale. You know, here was this war that we were going to start, and nobody was talking to 25 million Iraqi people. Nobody cared what they thought. And really, nobody was interviewing the soldiers either. I mean, we had all these embedded journalists, but they were just doing fireworks. They were just around for the Pentagon photo op. They weren't really talking to the soldiers either, honestly. You know, what I've been trying to do is take that community radio journalism that you do at KABU, that we did at Free Speech Radio News, and apply it to this very important international crisis.
And so what we're looking at this morning is Aaron's newest book, The War Comes Home, Washington's Battle Against American Veterans. And having said that, Aaron, we're throwing open the phone lines. The number to call is 503-231-8187. If you're a veteran or someone you know and love is a veteran, if your neighbor's a veteran, we want to hear from you. What have you heard? What do you understand about the ways that veterans are shortchanged in our local community? This is a huge issue. Sometimes I go to the dollar store. I don't want to tell too much about myself because that's a little bit embarrassing. But at the dollar store, they have big stacks of toys on the counter by the cash register. And they'll tell you when you go and get your, you know, squeegees or whatever you're getting, your dog toy at the dollar store. They'll say, would you like to pay an extra dollar and buy a toy to donate to a needy veteran's family for Operation Homefront? And if you're in the dollar store here in Portland, the charming cashiers, and they are charming, whenever someone does that, they go on the intercom and say, "Ooh, another dollar for Operation Homefront, woo!" And, you know, God bless everyone who wants to help out. I'm just confused about what kind of position we've put veterans in this country. I'm confused about where corporations like Dollar Tree make a buck off the issues that returning veterans' families have. That's shocking to me.
Or how about this, Lisa? I mean, it's great that people want to help out by donating a dollar here and a dollar
for a
there,
teddy bear,
right?
Yeah.
But we have an obligation as a country to take care of people in a systematic way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the fact that our veterans, after putting on a uniform to serve their country, come home wounded and then have to depend on charity that people give at a dollar store, okay, is an indication of the extent at which our government is failing to do its job, right? They should be getting the highest quality medical care. They should be getting the highest quality benefits in terms of home loan. You know, in terms of education. You know, all these things are promised to folks when they sign up, right? The fact that people are so dependent on charity, the fact that we have, 150,000 veterans homeless in this country, and, you know, we have the dollar store asking for a buck from its consumers, indicates the extent to which our government is failing to do its job.
And the number to call, you know, call now. Don't wait till the last 5 minutes of the show, because so many people who are listening right now, you have fascinating takes on these issues. You're thinking about things that we haven't thought of yet, and we want to hear from you. 503-231-8187. I know you have something to say about it. There's a few other things, Aaron, about this war, you know, Iraq, Afghanistan, that really get me. Here in Oregon and Washington State, you know, we don't really have that many people here. But in Washington State, the Striker Brigade, based up at Fort Lewis McChord right now, in Washington State, a whole, I want to say, 14 GIs from out of that Striker Brigade have been arrested in the past month because apparently they created a death squad within Iraq and experimented with tossing grenades at civilians. And they've been rolled over, I think, to civilian authorities up there in Washington State, which I've never heard of before. And it's a fascinating story that I don't see reported on very much. The Striker Brigade, it used to be based at that gigantic base in, I want to say, North Carolina, something like that. It was rolled over to Washington State about 5 or 6 years ago. And the Strikers are the people that go, they are the real cannon fodder. They are sent into completely dangerous areas with these theoretically fortified Humvees, but they like whole platoons practically have been killed in Iraq. But that fascinates me in its way, because we see this almost this level of criminality with people returning from the war, and it's like, what are they bringing home? And we do have a caller. David's on the phone. What do you think, David?
Oh, hey, I just wanted to weigh in and say this is the same BS, different century. I'm reminded, you said something about a revolution, and I was thinking about the Revolutionary War. And, you know, it's been the same way for veterans all through our country's history, is that they've been promised this, and they've, you know, laid down their lives so that the corporate state could carry on its business. And then when they got home, they got screwed.
Mm.
So that's
hey,
all
you know. David,
oh,
I just want to say that, you know, obviously I would like if everyone would buy my book, but another really interesting book is called The Wages of War by Richard Severo, who's a fantastic New York Times reporter, now retired, who covered the Agent Orange poisoning of our troops back in the 60s and 70s. And his book, The Wages of War, From Valley Forge to Vietnam, it chronicles how, beginning with the Revolutionary War soldiers who were not paid the money that they were promised to be paid by George Washington, and then had Shays' Rebellion, they rebelled against the newly independent country over their lack of payment, all the way through Spanish-American War, Civil War, World War I, where we had a bonus march on Washington of veterans, you know, Korea, Vietnam, Gulf War, this war. You're right. This is part of a pattern that does go back to the beginning of our country.
Well, not only did they not get paid, with regard to Shays' Rebellion, we're talking about, you know, the aristocracy tried to take their land away from them because they couldn't pay in cash their taxes on their land. And that was back in the day when something could be done about it by the people. But in this day and age, everybody's too busy. And I have to tell you, I was ashamed a few months after the Iraq War started that I didn't go out and protest. I've gotten over that. But I tell you, I felt really bad. I felt like, you know, I really should have been out there because it just wasn't right. And
thanks for calling, David. Really appreciate your call. This is Wednesday Morning Talk Radio, and the number to call if you want to contribute to this discussion is 503-231-8187. Our guest is Aaron Glantz. He's live on the phone. His newest book, The War Comes Home, America's Battle Against America's Veterans. And do we have another caller? All right. We would love to hear from you. Please don't wait until the last minute to call because actually so many of our listeners are actually really smart people with fascinating comments and things to point out, as David just did. Aaron Glantz, can you talk a little bit about Winter Soldier, Iraq and Afghanistan? Winter Soldier, we aired that live on KABU and it was a weeper. What was Winter Soldier?
Winter Soldier, you know, as you mentioned, you aired it live on KABU. I was there, and in addition to editing the book for Iraq Veterans Against the War, I also...
You were the producer and host,
I also produced and hosted that broadcast along with my colleague Amy Allison. You know, it is incredibly powerful, as I'm sure your listeners remember, to hear firsthand over a period of 3 days from soldier after soldier, veteran after veteran, what actually goes on in the war. You know, the killing of civilians, the frustration caused by the lack of proper equipment, the demeaning of women within the ranks, the suicides that we've touched on a little bit, the battle for health care that we've spoken about that our troops face when they're wounded, the rules of engagement that are handed down by, you know, people back in Washington that our soldiers are supposed to follow, which are incredibly lax and allow for the killing of civilians, and the dehumanizing of the Iraqi and Afghan people that's taken place within the service that make it easier for our soldiers to kill. Because, of course, it is not a natural thing for people to do to kill somebody else.
Aaron, can you explain the name Winter Soldier? What does it mean?
Winter Soldier was a phrase used. It's funny, here we are. We were talking for 20 minutes. This is the second time we mentioned the Revolutionary War. Winter Soldier was a term used by Thomas Paine, describing the patriotism of the soldiers that were with George Washington at Valley Forge. And, you know, Valley Forge was incredibly brutal. There's no food. It's cold. A lot of soldiers died. Some deserted. So George Washington needed to rally the troops. And Thomas Paine, you know, excoriated them that the summer soldier, you know, kind of, you know, fights when the war is popular, but the winter soldier is going to tough it out no matter what for his country. And so these, even if it's unpopular, even if it's cold, even if it's bitter, even if it's lonely, the winter soldier will soldier on. And so that's why these Iraq and Afghanistan veterans talking about the very uncomfortable aspects of war that most Americans would like to forget call themselves winter soldiers.
And we do have a couple of callers. Jim is on the line. Jim, what's going on?
Well, I'm a veteran of the Navy, won enlistment 1970 to 74. And when I was in the service, all they ever tell you, you know, is all the benefits you get if you stay in for a career. Well, that's what they did at the time. And I assumed that I didn't have any benefits when I got out, but it turns out I was eligible for the VA. Excuse me. And I don't have any service-connected disabilities or anything, and for me, the VA has been a wonderful thing. I've had very little problem with it. But I've noticed that friends of mine who did careers, and in many cases have, you know, all kinds of problems from the work they did, the VA really goes head-to-head with career people that, you know, try to get benefits for whatever reason. I don't know why, and of course they've been, they were just awful under the Bush administration with the, you know, current veterans and stuff. So anyway, that's
you know, a really important question. Is a great health system if you can get in the door. They have fantastic doctors. If you have a service-connected disability, it's often free. If you don't have that service-connected disability and you're a indigent veteran, if you're poor, it's free. If you have a service-connected, if you have no service-connected disability and you want to go to the VA, they charge you a little bit of money. But it's fantastic care if you can get in the door. And the reason I call my book "The War Comes Home: Washington's Battle Against America's Veterans" is because our government has erected a bureaucracy that is designed to keep people from accessing that system when they come home wounded. Because if everyone who's wounded, you know, the hundreds of thousands of people coming home wounded from this war, if they all access the VA system, it would cost a lot more to the taxpayers, and they'd rather spend the money on something else.
God forbid. This is Wednesday Morning Talk Radio, and the number to call, 503-231-8187. We have Pam on the... Pam, what's going on?
Yeah, it's me again. I just had to call in. I'm sorry. You know, if people don't like what they're hearing, and, I mean, in terms of war, people not getting services they need, everything, why do you pay for it? It doesn't count to me to just say something. You got to do something, and we're paying for it. And that's the first thing we got to do, is stop paying for it. Give that, pay your taxes. Don't trust them to Congress. Give them to somebody who really needs it. I mean, there's the IVAW, for instance. There's Coffee Strong up in, I think it's Fort Hood. I'm a little bit unsure about where it is. It's up around Tacoma.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. And you can do more. And I think
Pam's talking about war tax resistors. Tell people where to get more information about that.
Well, you can get information about that. You can go to Facebook, oddly enough, and just check out War Tax Resistance. You can go on the website to, I'm going to just rattle off a bunch of letters here, NWTRCC.org, of course, and that stands for National War Tax Resistance Coordinating Committee. And just as an aside, that came about because there's all kinds of little groups all over the country that were doing this, that are doing this, and we thought it'd be a kind of a nifty idea to get together and coordinate, you know, let each other know what we're doing, problems we're having, because this is civil resistance and you have a lot of problems. But I'm just, you know, it's that and whatever you do to build community, but you need to have that tax resistance piece in there, I believe. I really believe. I think we have to step outside of comfort. We can do this. God knows the soldiers do this, whether they believe in it or are forced into it.
Mm-hmm.
There's an economic... I know, we're getting a little off the subject. Aaron Glanz, I'm so happy that you're here. You're on Facebook too, right?
Yes, I am. I mean, okay. Like everyone else in the world.
Right. So
I know a few people who aren't, but that's okay.
I'm going to hang up.
Thanks
you
a lot,
so
Pam.
Much. Bye-bye.
Thanks for calling. And just briefly, 503-231-8187 is the number to call. We have another caller. Joanne, what's going on? What do you think, Joanne?
Well, oh gosh, this country is in such a fast pace, and they want everything quick and instant. And I won't be able to say a lot of words. Mr. Glanz?
Yeah.
I was going to talk about my son and his painful experience and his recent going to lose his home, his one and only home. He was in the Gulf War, and he's been out of work for a while. And even before then, he had a job, and then he was out of work. But there's a lot more pain and everything. So I'm just going to ask you this, sir. All these peaceful rallies and marches against the war in the 90s, and I don't since then, I'm sorry, I can't remember, but anyway, I don't think the people are going to rise up and rebel against these ongoing wars, because they've been clamped down too far. Activists are now on our rights and freedoms and I don't know what else in Congress and everywhere. But to do things comfortably and intellectually, I've seen it doesn't work against war. So anyway, you probably have your opinion.
Me.
I'll get off the air. Goodbye.
Thanks, Joanne. Thanks for calling. What do you think?
Joanne, you know what concerns me? And first of all, I wish your son the best of luck. You know, he served his country. He shouldn't lose his home. And I hope that, he's been in touch with the county veteran service officer to see if there might be some programs that might be available for him. Every county has a veteran service officer who knows the rules inside and out and can let you know if there's a benefit that you haven't tapped yet that might help you out. And he should definitely avail himself of that. And the story also reminds us that veterans who have served in these wars and are dealing with pain and are dealing with physical wounds are dealing with the same crappy job market that the rest of us are. Only on top of it, they have the physical wounds and the mental wounds of battle. What disturbs me is that the country, by and large, this program, this hour, accepted, and some other leading lights of information, country doesn't care about the war anymore. People are more interested in their iPad than they are in the war. And it says something about American society that should make all of us very angry. It says something that we can send, young men and women off to another country to be killed and to kill other people, that we can largely be opposed to the war, but that the war will continue, unless we take some action. We right now are not doing that.
So this is Wednesday Morning Talk Radio, and we are live on the phone with Aaron Glantz. We can hear a baby there with you. And we're talking about his newest book, The War Comes Home, Washington's Battle Against American Veterans. We have two callers. We have Bob on the line, but hold on just a second. Just to back up a little bit, people have been bringing up some of these issues about... I think it was Jim that talked about how people who are long-term people in the military not getting their benefits so easily. I want to say that Ron Wyden, Earl Blumenauer, Kurt Schrader, and Victor DeFazio, anyway, Peter DeFazio, they've actually, all of our members of Congress have been working on an array of different efforts since last year, because studies have shown that National Guard members, Oregon, of course, we don't have an army here, but we have National Guard, and we've sent all of our National Guard and almost all their equipment to Iraq, and now obviously it's going to be shifted over to Afghanistan as well, troops to Afghanistan too. They found that our National Guards members were not getting Veterans Administration benefits, even though they were suffering from the same issues, illnesses. And so they've been trying to agitate around that, which is really interesting. I want to give them some credit for it. Also, this issue that Pam brought up, where is the money going? Don't give your money to the war. How can we be spending all this money on war? And our soldiers, our family members, our brothers and sisters, moms and dads, sons and daughters are not even getting services for when they lose an arm, they lose limbs, they lose their minds, they lose their peace of mind. And there was just over the weekend, the New York Times did a story about how Blackwater, which is now known as Z, set up hundreds, I want to say it was 200 dummy corporations to pull down contracts for the war worth hundreds of millions of dollars. even though I think they had been suspended from getting contracts. Maybe I'm not even getting that story completely straight. But the degree to which some of these shadowy corporations have gone to secure the money, and that's our money that we've paid, that has killed, you know, and again, let's look for just a second about the Iraq and Afghanistan body count. More than 1 million people in Iraq. I mean, please, everybody, just stop pretending like, you know, as I read in the Times, you know, tens of thousands of people. No, it's more than 1 million people. And we don't, I mean, it would be really nice if we took 1 minute to talk about that a little bit, because that's part of what's breaking our soldiers too, because they know the truth about what's going on there. So anyway, I just had to throw that out. And then WikiLeaks, Adrian Assange, putting out this information, these documents about the wars and being basically black opted. I'm putting that out. I'm fascinated by WikiLeaks and these allegations, all these things just for regular citizens on planet Earth to get some transparency about what's really going on, dragging into the end of a decade at this war. Anyway, the Wednesday Morning Talk Radio, I'm Lisa Loving. The number to call, 503-231-8187. We've got Bob on the phone. Bob, I'm sorry, I had to go off for a minute, but what do you think?
Oh, that's fine. I appreciate it. I just want to say that in the last 7 years in Iraq, there's over 1.5 million that have been killed. And out of that 1.5 million, about 750,000 have been 14 years old or under. So they're basically children that are being killed. It's unfortunate. Second point, I'd like to, we should boycott Dollar Tree. Kid wants a stupid toy for a dollar.
No.
You know, they'd much rather have their mother or father at home.
Yeah.
And that's all I have to say.
Thanks a lot, Bob.
Thank you.
And we have another caller. Leah's on the line. Leah.
Good morning.
What's up?
Well, I wanted to respond to the a foreclosure problem with that. I'm working with a group here in Oregon through the local Granges and the State of Oregon's Grange Veterans Committee, and to get information on foreclosure to our vets. I want to give out a website, and I'm hoping you'll put this at the front desk.
Definitely. Go ahead.
It's www.goodgriefamerica.ning, ning.com. And let me give my phone number as well.
Okay.
Because if they can't get a hold of that or whatever, they can call me. And it's Leah at 503-254-8113. And so they need to call that several times if they can't get through. But we are in the process of holding information around the country and around the state for the vets through this organization. It's a nonprofit, but they do more than anybody I know of. Also, the local state office of the veterans, through the Grange, will get you in contact with people who can help with foreclosure. So we're really wanting to target the veterans, but everybody, so that we can stay in our homes, and that's the goal. So, and the other thing is, I want to make a quick on Eric Prince.
Yeah.
And see, you know what? You know where they started? His father was one of the founders of Amway.
Right.
And that's where a lot of their money still comes from. It's a global deal. I never participated in Amway. Years ago when they were doing this America Buys thing, I looked at it and I said, you know, there's something wrong here. I'm not participating. But anyway.
Wow. Yeah. Leah, I haven't heard anyone talk about the Grange since the 1980s.
Oh,
I mean,
well,
where are you located? Are you out in the country somewhere?
No. Well, yes, we are. I'm at the Russellville Grange here in Portland, over in Northeast Portland. We are, the local Granges, the state Granges, are gearing up and revitalizing through green energy, green food, green everything. We're becoming sustainable. We are working with our local neighborhoods and the veterans organization. So we're holding foreclosure meetings at various Granges around the state, and we're in the process of pulling in all the other organizations, the foreign war guys, everybody the local vet centers, the Iraqis Against the War, whoever you are, you need to come and participate and help us, because we really need a lot of help.
Wow,
but
yeah.
But it's a big deal, and we're really pushing it. So there's a huge movement going on. So check out your local Grange and see what's going on. See what you can do.
I got to dig into that. Leah,
yeah.
You're just, it's like 4-H meets the anti-war movement. That's insane. I've never heard of it. That's great.
Big time. We're networking with schools and businesses everywhere. So we've just planted a garden at ours. We're getting ready to do just a whole bunch of stuff. So.
Wow.
Okay.
Thanks a lot, Leah.
You're welcome.
You know, that reminds me that, you know, over the years that I was the KBOO evening news director, we would always have the Iraq body count during the evening news. And there was a story of a local, I think he was 20 years old from Clackamas County, from Estacada or something. And he trained a dog, this beautiful, butter-colored lab, who was a bomb-sniffing dog. And he and the dog were casualties of the war, and this dog was one of the first canine casualties. I know that sounds dumb, but it stuck with me. This young guy, he was only 20, and he trained this dog to do something positive, and they both died in the war. This is Wednesday Morning Talk Radio. We are actually live on the phone with war correspondent Aaron Glantz. His newest book, The War Comes Home, Washington's Battle Against America's Veterans. The number to call to contribute to this conversation is 503-231-8187, and we have Pam on the line. Pam?
Yes. The one thing I think is that if there was a draft, we'd have a lot of people out on the streets protesting these wars.
That's what
but
Charles...
Because I can tell you, I mean, I'm the mother of a boy who's 18 years old, and I'd be out there. Mm-hmm. I'd be stomping. I would be doing everything. And I know my friends would be too, but our boys aren't, and girls or whatever aren't going out there because there isn't a draft. Mm. And it really takes away the immediacy of what we're doing away from us. And I don't know. I mean, that's just the thought I've had about it. You know, why am I not out there just, you know, I would be. You know, I know it's an awful thing to say. I mean, it's not that I you know, I've done some things, you know, here and there, but not much.
Your son does have to register for the draft, though. I'm the mother of an 18-year-old, and he's got all the forms there on the kitchen table.
Right. No, he has.
My son has.
But, I mean, it's still a volunteer army and military at this point. So,
all right.
So I mean, not that I want it, mind you, but I think that's part of the reason why you're not seeing people out on the streets.
All right. Thanks
That's
a lot,
just
Pam.
My thought. Okay. Bye.
Aaron Glantz, I feel like Charles Rangel brought this issue up years ago and tried to push for an institution of the draft in Congress. Do you remember that? Am I being a nut?
Yeah, no, he does it on a regular basis, you know, and I think that if we have a war, we should have a draft. You know, the two of them should go hand in hand because, you know, what I was talking about before, that, you know, soldiers are killing Iraqi people and being killed themselves every day in Iraq and Afghanistan, and most Americans are at the mall, you know, or most Americans are looking for a job now. but at any rate, most Americans, you know, couldn't care less one way or the other. And we shouldn't have a war where most Americans are disengaged. If we're going to have a war, all those people out there in the country who support President Bush and support the others who start this war, and all these people out there in the country that are telling President Obama that he can't have a quote-unquote precipitous withdrawal from Iraq and Afghanistan, they should all be faced with their sons and daughters going to fight in the war, you know. And you know, the effect of not having a draft is also that the same soldiers are getting sent again and again. So you have people who signed up, you know, in 2000, you know, when there was no war. They may have signed up because they lived in rural Oregon and wanted to, you know, see the world or
be in the National Guard.
In the National Guard, get a university education, whatever. You know, now they've served like 3 tours in Iraq and Afghanistan, or maybe they signed up after 9/11 because they wanted to defend their country as it was being attacked. You know, in Vietnam, everyone had to go once. Everyone had to go once, and it was still bad, you know, for all of the veterans of Vietnam. You know, just imagine if you're out there listening, you're a veteran of Vietnam and you served a year over there, just imagine if you had to serve 3 years.
Hmm.
What kind of hell that would have been.
And go back and you don't even know if you're going to be called back until you are.
Yeah.
We are live on the air. This is Wednesday Morning Talk Radio. You're listening to KBOO Portland. Our guest this morning is Aaron Glantz, actually a beloved voice on KBOO for many years now, a war correspondent. His work has appeared in The Nation, The Progressive, San Francisco Chronicle, The American Prospect. He's a Roslyn Carter Mental Health Journalism Fellow at the Carter Center and a fellow at the Hechinger Institute on Education and the Media at Columbia University Teachers College. In addition to The War Comes Home, Aaron is the author of the San Francisco Chronicle bestseller, How America Lost Iraq, and co-author of Winter Soldier, Iraq and Afghanistan, long time community radio journalist and very legitimate, you know, regular journalist as well. And the number to call is 503-231-8187. And we have Stevie Ray. Stevie Ray, where are you at? What are you doing?
I'm driving a big truck in Happy Valley.
Oh my God, Stevie Ray.
I have a question though. With all the work that we all do and we try our very best, I was always getting these comments like, oh, you're such a soldier. And my patent response was, no, I'm a warrior because soldiers take orders.
Oh, my God.
Right? And then I found this podcast by, I think it was Robert Fisk, and he was referring to how during Vietnam, in order to prevent atrocities, we established our soldiers' code, you know, of the terms of engagement and the rules of engagement in order to not rip apart civilian life to the farthest extent. And he's talking about how they've changed that now to what's called the Warrior's Code, which I find personally very offensive because it doesn't fit. And it's not, I don't know how to describe how offensive it is. Like, it's not a patriotism to the rights of the soldiers to make positive decisions. It's a leading into endless war and civilian or not.
Mm.
And I was wondering if Aaron could, if he's heard Robert Fisk talk about that, or if he could
refer any information he has.
Thanks, Stevie Ray.
Yeah, okay, I have some good news. The good news is that when you talk about rules of engagement, at least in Iraq, I can't speak to Afghanistan, but at least in Iraq, the rules of engagement have gotten more restrictive in recent years. You know, I was in Fallujah in 2004 when we blew up that city and killed, you know, hundreds of innocent civilians. And I, you know, everything that moves was shot, and I saw the bodies of, elderly women who were rotting in the street because they had been bombed because they went outside, and, you know, everyone was afraid to go outside and get the body to bury it because they were afraid that they would get killed, too, if they went out because we had such lax rules of engagement. Well, you know, now we have 50,000 troops in Iraq instead of 135,000, and these remaining troops are in a support capacity to the Iraqi military, you know, which means that they're not out on patrol blowing up people's houses, raiding people's houses on a systematic basis like they used to be.
Mm-hmm.
It means that we're not doing something like leveling a city like we did in Fallujah, or a Tel Afar, some of the other cities that we've destroyed over the course of this war. I really believe that some of our concerns with the conduct of the war have improved under President Obama as opposed to President Bush, whereas some of our concerns, you know, remain extremely valid. And the rules of engagement question, I think, is something where you know, the previous president wanted to scrap the Geneva Convention. The Geneva Convention does not apply. He built Abu Ghraib prison. You know, he did all these horrible, horrible things, right? And the new president isn't getting us out of all those things immediately, but there is a lot more respect for human life, I think, even as he continues these wars.
From your mouth to God's ear, Aaron. Okay, I have to say, coming up this morning on KBU at 9 on Political Perspectives, host Sue Cipriano speaks with physics teacher and peace activist David Chandler about the free fall of the World Trade Center buildings. Chandler is an independent 9/11 researcher, active with architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth. At 9:30, social critic and author Michael Parenti speaks on ideology and conspiracy, Part 2. At 10, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre and Liam Delta. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, Adam Shapiro, the founder of the Free Gaza Movement, talks about the siege of Gaza, and Earth First activist Daryl Cherney talks about going to court to stop the FBI from destroying evidence in the bombing of Judy Berry and himself 20 years ago. At 11, The Dirt Bag features a discussion of a new fruit fly pest, and an interview with Taggart Siegel, author, director of the film The Real Dirt on Farmer John. Remember Farmer John? He'll discuss his new film, Queen of the Sun, which is about the plight of the honeybee. And tune in tonight at 7 for the second of two candidate forums for the KBU Board of Directors election. Hear statements, questions, and answers from the candidates. If you are a KBU member, you get to vote for that. It's definitely not too late to join. So anyway, we are Talk Radio. We're with Aaron Glantz. We're hoping for the best with making it safer for our veterans coming home from the war. And who do we have again? Matt is on the line. Matt, what do you think?
I'm here.
All right, Matt.
I just want to make a comment on your caller a couple of callers ago. There, she was saying that we don't have a draft, and otherwise she'd be out protesting, and we don't see protesters out there. Well, you know, my thought is that, and I've heard this before, you know, on the station, is that this is an economic draft. People are in such an economic position is that they're joining up for a job, you know, instead of going to Walmart or flipping burgers or pumping gas. They're putting their lives on the line to work, to get a job, to get out of this economic situation they're in.
I think that's an interesting point to bring up as well.
Although, Lisa, I want to say,
yes,
the Army is recruiting fewer people and spending 9 times as much money as they were at the beginning of the war.
How's that, Aaron? Why? What's going on there?
What's going on is that you sell this story. You know, join the military will give you money for college. You see the world. You know, you look good in a uniform. All that sounds really good when there's no war going on, right? You know, 1999, no war going on. Join the military, see the world, learn skills, money for college sounds great, right? 2004, the U.S. is at war in Iraq and Afghanistan simultaneously. You join the war, you might end up dead. I mean, you join the military, you might end up dead. So, you know, the Pentagon likes to spin this story that more people are joining the military because the economy is bad and the military provides a good job opportunity. That's what they're selling. But it's costing them more and more money to market that to fewer and fewer people. And one of the reasons that we have so many people who have served 2, 3, 4, 5 tours in Iraq and Afghanistan and are being redeployed despite the fact that they're already wounded against doctor's orders. One of the reasons this is happening is because the Army and the Marine Corps are unable to recruit enough fresh bodies, even now in the down economy.
This is Wednesday Morning Talk Radio. We are live on the line with war correspondent Aaron Glantz. His newest book, The War Comes Home, Washington's Battle Against America's Veterans. You can find out more about Aaron Glantz's work by going to his website, aaronglantz.com. That's AaronGlantz.com. And by this afternoon, this show is going to be podcast on KBOO.fm. And you can go to our website and listen to this again. Send a link of it to your father-in-law or your grandma or whomever and put it on your Facebook page. And that's because our super cool engineer and his dog, Steve Nasser and Sky, they put it up there for us. And the number to call, 503-231-8187. And we do have a caller. Phil's on the line. What's going on, Phil?
Well, I was wondering if either of you would like to comment on the fact that I believe the world's most expensive U.S. embassy is being built in Iraq at the cost of $1 billion.
I tell you what, Aaron, I've been thinking about that this whole time. I mean, you can see it from space. It's so big, right?
And war is money, so I just think our money would be much better spent elsewhere.
Yeah. Anyway, thanks a lot, Phil.
Thank you.
Aaron, what to me, that embassy there in Iraq is a big anchor. It's a big deal. So it makes me think, you know, we're not going to leave that ever, are we? What do you think about it?
I don't know. You know, we want to have a big embassy in Iraq and 2,000 troops to support it. It really doesn't bother me.
Okay.
It really doesn't. You know, I mean, I'm concerned about the situation that we had when Bush was the president, when we had 135,000 or even during the surge, 170,000 American soldiers running around killing people and being killed and being wounded. Wounding, you know, you said the caller earlier talking about the tremendous number of children under 14 who have been killed, you know, Iraqi children. It's disgusting, right? So for me, you know, as somebody who spent a lot of time over there, if I don't care, you know, if we have some kind of geopolitical motive to like build an embassy and run business through there and have a couple thousand soldiers to protect the embassy, it's fine, as long as they're not like, you know, out there engaging in war.
Aaron, you don't have to answer this, and you don't have to talk about it if you don't want to, but I wanted to take a moment to ask you, on a personal level, all the work you've done in the past 8 years, could you talk a little bit about what impact it has had on you personally? Because, I mean, sure, you're a journalist, you're unembedded, but you've been through some of the same stuff that these veterans that we are talking about have been through. I mean, could you talk about it for a minute? But if you don't want to, you don't have to. But I have to ask you about that. How do you feel? How are you?
Well, you know, I feel a lot better now than I did a year or two ago. I think I went through a lot of the same phases that some of our returning soldiers go through, which is at first when I came home and I was having trouble sleeping and I was seeing visions of Fallujah and some of the other problems that I was having. I didn't seek out any help because I was covering these veterans who were doing much worse than I was, you know, who were drinking, you know, two bottles of whiskey a day just to survive and stay, quote-unquote, sane, you know. But, you know, the more I continue to do this veterans work, you know, the more I'm exposing myself to the same trauma that I'm, like, the people talking about the same, very same traumas that I experienced when I was over there. And so I did, you know, about 2 years ago get some help. And I have to say that, at least for me, you know, a lot of the issues that I was facing are not nearly as pronounced as they used to be. And it gives me some hope for recovery for so many of the young men and women who have fought in these wars. So I think that's something that I would have to say about that this morning.
Okay. Okay, okay. Okay, we had a couple callers, but they wiggled away. We do have a caller. James is on the line. James, what's in your mind this morning?
Hey, there's a couple things on my mind. I just wanted to say that I'm a long-time, peace activist. My family let me wait until I was about 12 or 13 to get a Social Security number. I waited as long as I could to register with the Selective Service. At age 25, I was faced with the dilemma: if I didn't register by age 26, I would not be able to get any federal grants for college, and I wanted to go to college. So I bought, you know, I eventually hunkered down and registered for that. But I also consider myself a feminist on certain levels, and I hear feminists you know, advocate for different things, but I've never, ever heard any feminist advocate for being obligated to register for the Selective Service. And we have a lot of, you know, equal opportunity in our country as far as, like, gender goes, but I've never, ever heard anybody say, I want the right to be drafted. And I just kind of want to throw that out there for public discussion. I know that women are about 52% of the population, and everybody that has a belly button has a mother, and there is power there. And so I just wanted to hear, you know, what some of the women out there and some of the other female feminists have to say about the draft, and if there was, you know, men and women were both obligated to military service, would we see those laws change sooner?
Thanks a lot, James. Thanks for calling. I wish you had called earlier because we're running out of show. We only have about 1 minute left, and I think we do have another caller. But James, James, when people go to KBOO this afternoon and they find this podcast, you can comment on the podcast. I'd love to hear some people comment about that. And I have to say, my sister was in the military for 16 years, and she had a very bad experience, even though she was in for a long, long, long time. Okay, one last caller. Let's try to rush him through. Oh, we lost him. Aaron, we are running out of show, so I want to put it to you, for people who go and pick up The War Comes Home, Washington's Battle Against America's Veterans, people who go to your website, aaronglantz.com, what's the most important thing, Aaron, that you want your readers and your listeners to take away from this whole issue?
You know, I think that what I would say now is that we can't forget about the wars. We can't forget. I mean, right now they're still going on. People are still coming home from these wars each and every day. The number of veterans of Iraq and Afghanistan continues to increase. The mistake that we made about at the end of the Vietnam War was that we were so exhausted by the Vietnam War that when the veterans came home, you know, in the 70s, we kicked them to the curb, not because we were spitting on them, but just because we were preoccupied with other things. And we cannot make that mistake again. We have to pay attention. We have to be mindful of the work that we need to do, and we have to be focused on it and force our government to do it.
Thank you very much, Aaron Glantz. Thanks for being with us today.
Okay, God bless you.
And this has been Wednesday Morning Talk Radio. I'm Lisa Loving. Go for that podcast this afternoon on KBOO.FM, and stay tuned for Political Perspectives with Sue Cipriano.